the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider on this first weekend of February 2025. In a minute, I'll look at the top stories of the week at the Vatican, but first want to tell you about my guest in the interview segment, Father Ryan Brady, a priest and a dear friend from Chicago. The story of his vocation is truly inspiring, and we talk about that, his 2021 ordination, the first parish where he worked, and how he ended up as pastor of the church where he grew up, St. Christine in Chicago. Part one of our talk airs this weekend. Stay tuned for a great story and some surprises. Now, an overview of the top news stories of the week. No time for a Q&A this week, but if you have a question, email me at joanknows@gmail.com. Sunday, January 26. Pope Francis presided at Mass on the sixth Sunday of the Word of God, and he invited Christians to allow the Holy Spirit to make Christ present in our lives and society through frequent reading of the Bible. He said listening and understanding scriptures is not enough. Rather, the Word of God must bring us to experience, quote, amazement, so that it may enter our hearts and renew us. Sunday, by the way, also marked the final day of the Jubilee for the World of Communications, and there were large numbers of journalists from around the world in attendance at the Papal Mass. Saturday, Pope Francis had received journalists in audience. After reciting the Angelus, the Pope appealed for an end to the conflict in Sudan, saying, "It is causing the most severe humanitarian crisis in the world, with dramatic consequences even in South Sudan." He invited warring parties to stop fighting and sit down at the negotiating table. He also expressed concern for the situation in Colombia's Catatumbo region, where many civilians have been killed by clashes between armed groups, with 30,000 people forced to leave their homes. Monday, January 27th. In his annual message for the 33rd World Day of the Sick, Pope Francis grapples with the profound questions that confront those who are suffering and those who care for them. How can we be strong when our bodies are prey to severe debilitating illnesses that require costly treatment that we may not be able to afford? How can we show strength when, in addition to our own sufferings, we see those of our loved ones who support us yet feel powerless to help us? The World Day of the Sick is observed worldwide each year on February 11th, Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes, with a solemn celebration taking place every 3 years at an international Marian shrine. In view of the Jubilee year, Pope Francis chose to delay for 1 year the solemn celebration that would normally occur in 2025, celebrating it instead in 2026 at a shrine in Peru. Also Monday, Pope Francis addressed the presidents of Episcopal Commissions for Communications and the directors of national communications offices, and he encouraged them to network together to build a different model of communications, able to sow hope and mutual understanding instead of division. Tuesday, January 28th, the Vatican released Antigua et Nova, Ancient and New, a note from the Dicasteries for the Doctrine of the Faith and for Culture and Education on the relationship between artificial intelligence and human intelligence. It highlights the potential and the challenges of artificial intelligence in the areas of education, the economy, labor, health, human and international relations, and war. Also Tuesday, in a message to the Catholic Social Ministry Gathering, organized by the Secretariat of Justice and Peace of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, Pope Francis encouraged social ministry leaders to, quote, build bridges of reconciliation, inclusion, and fraternity, and he asked them not to be afraid to be protagonists of history. Also Tuesday, Pope Francis wrote a message to the Conference of Catholic Bishops of India as it meets in plenary session. He asked that the church in India, quote, continue to be a sign of hope to the entire nation, always seeking to open wide its doors to welcome the poor and most vulnerable, so that all may have the hope of a better future. Wednesday, January 29th. At the general audience, Pope Francis continued his catechesis series on Jesus Christ, our hope, reflecting on St. Joseph and inviting the faithful to look to him as a model of trust, openness, and love. Joseph's role in the fulfillment of God's saving plan, said Francis, was made known to him in a dream. With great faith and trust, he responded by taking Mary as his wife and making a home for the incarnate Son of God. Like him, may we respond generously to God's plan for our lives and through the practice of hope and love, welcome Jesus into our hearts and homes. Thursday, January 30th, Pope Francis met with seminarians and formators of several Spanish dioceses, and he urged future priests to allow themselves to be shaped by the pain of those they serve. He highlighted the October 2024 torrential rains that flooded Valencia, killing around 230 people and causing massive property damage. In such circumstances, the role of priests, he said, is to bind up the brokenhearted and to provide spiritual support for people amid the large and small disasters of daily life. Also Thursday, in a telegram to U.S. President Donald Trump, Pope Francis expressed closeness and grief for the victims and families of those who lost their lives when two planes collided mid-air over Washington, D.C.'s Potomac River Wednesday evening. All 67 passengers on the commercial flight and military helicopter died. Francis commended the souls of the deceased to the loving mercy of Almighty God and offered his deepest sympathy to the families now mourning the loss of a loved one. Friday, January 31st. In his address to the Roman Rota for the opening of the judicial year, Pope Francis called upon judges to exercise prudence, justice, and charity, remarking that every just ruling contributes to strengthening the culture of the indissolubility inferred by the Church's teaching on marriage. Quote, we are called by the pain and hope of many faithful who seek clarity regarding the truth of their personal condition and, consequently, their possibility of fully participating in sacramental life. 2025 marks the 10th anniversary of two motu proprio written by Francis that reformed the process for annulments, empowering diocesan bishops to act as judges to nullify marriages, eliminating the requirement that the Roman Rota sign off with its own sentence, and also made a case for making the procedure free. Well, lots of news this week, and those are the week's top stories. But now, stay right here for the interview segment with Chicagoan Father Ryan Brady, as we talk about his path to priesthood, his life since ordination, and the ways God has surprised him.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with the gospel message. EWTN is the most trusted source of authentically Catholic content on the air today, featuring Mother Angelica, Teresa Tomeo, and Father Mitch Pacwa. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
Carry the faith wherever you go. Catch up with the latest news from Washington, D.C., the Vatican, and the world on all of our EWTN news platforms, including EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, the Catholic News Agency, and EWTN News In Depth. Download the EWTN app at EWTNapps.com today. Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Well, I just want to welcome my listeners to this interview segment of Vatican Insider. And it's going to be a little bit different than usual because it's the story of a vocation, the priesthood, and friendship. Now, that vocation and that priest is my special guest this weekend, and that's Father Ryan Brady, a priest from the Archdiocese of Chicago. So welcome to Vatican Insider.
Thank you, Joan. It's good to be here with you.
Well, a fellow Chicagoan, we both know the area. I was born in a nearby suburb. Before we start looking at your story, you've been in Rome, of course, on a number of occasions. We always get together, but tell us who you're with now in Rome.
So Rome is my favorite city in the world, besides Chicago, of course.
Yeah.
And I'm here this time with the patrons of the arts in the Vatican Museums.
Oh.
And there are multiple chapters in the United States and internationally. And what we do is we have people who love, appreciate the transformative beauty of art. And we restore and repair and refurbish the artwork in the Vatican Museums. But also it extends beyond that sometimes, too. The reason I'm here now, the Illinois chapter of the Patrons of the Arts of the Vatican Museums, was going to pilgrimage to Rome to explore the Baldacchino or the Ciborium Monument of St. John Lateran, which we recently restored.
Oh. Well, you know, and Ryan, what is so important about the work of the patrons, and it was started by an American, one of our first ambassadors, William Wilson, what is so important about the work, the Vatican could not spend thousands or huge sums of money, tens of thousands, on restoring art when there's people who, as all the popes remind us, there are needy people out there. Whether it's the city of Rome or the city of Chicago, there's people who need that. And you want to hear that the Vatican is spending $35,000, you know, redoing this. So that idea came about, and the patrons through our, because I'm in New York chapter, in our yearly dues plus anything else we can adopt a statue to, you know, to restore or something. But anyway, they do wonderful work, and it does help the museum, something that has to be restored, or maybe even purchased, but usually restored. That's a good way of doing it, and not having the Vatican spend money on that instead of on the homeless or the needy.
It's a sad critique or criticism of the church sometimes by people who don't know otherwise, that, you know, why does the church hold on to all of these treasures instead of selling them and give to the poor? The church gives everything to the poor, including fully their heart. And then there is also a very rich treasure in the cultural heritage that we've inherited as a church, but also as humanity.
The church considers itself guardians,
exactly.
Not owners. Mm-hmm. So how do you sell something that you don't really own? Plus, if the Vatican today were to sell every blessed thing in the Vatican Museums, that money came in, it would take care of the poor and needy for probably under a week.
Exactly.
And then you have nothing else to sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know.
But we still have this artistic and treasure that is part of our story. And everything in the Vatican Museums is the story of all humanity. And honestly, as people of faith, it belongs to the poorest of the poor as much as it does to the Holy Father and everywhere in between.
And speaking of that, Pope Francis on several occasions has made tours like of the Sistine Chapel available to several hundred of Rome's poor. Because there's people in the Vatican who know them all by name. They're pretty amazing people. Well, I'm glad we're both members of the Patrons of the Arts in the Vatican Museums, PAVM, if you ever see that on a website, folks. But I do want to talk about friendship today, and friendship with a priest, as I mentioned earlier. And our story, I'm going to give the really short version of our story. In 1927, my grandparents gave a chalice to a newly ordained priest in Chicago. They had paid for his seminary years. Father Tui unfortunately died. The chalice went back to my grandparents, eventually came down to my father and mother, and eventually came to me. And when I knew the story, I decided that I would love to do the same thing. Find a young man, a seminarian, and give him that chalice. We met one time on Facebook. I had posted a story about Cardinal George, a film that was going to come out. You made a comment, a very interesting one. I wrote back, eventually said, oh my gosh, we had so much in common that was just phenomenal.
And many mutual friends.
And so mutual everything. And so eventually, you know, we went to emailing each other, not just on the site. And over the years, getting to know people who knew this Father Ryan Brady, I had a feeling that I found my young man who was going to get the chalice. We met at dinner in Chicago, December 22nd, 2018. You were in your second year of the seminary. And I had brought the chalice to Chicago through the good graces of Monsignor Boland, who headed Catholic Charities for 30 years. We met. You had worked at Catholic Charities with him. So it was a beautiful story. And it continued until your ordination, of course, on May 15th, 2021, mm-hmm. and then your first Mass, the Mass with that chalice, on May 16th. And naturally, I was there. I wouldn't have missed that had I...
Not only were you there, you were the lector.
Yes. Oh, yes, I was, that's of right. course. Mm-hmm. Amazing, amazing moments. For me to have followed you in that pre-ordination period, then the ordination, then what is life going to bring? So let's look at the next chapter. Your, you know, assistant pastor, and tell us about that time.
So I knew on May 15th, 2021, that I was going to be assigned to a parish, Our Lady of the Ridge St. Linus Church, on the southwest side of Chicago, in a little suburb called Oak Lawn in Chicago Ridge. I knew the parish, I knew how many parishioners there would be, and I had an understanding of the boundaries, but that was it. I had no clue the beauty that God had in store for me. I had no clue about the rich experiences that he had in store for me. I was there just a short period, only 3 years, and I think some amazing and beautiful things happened in that time. I had also been invited to participate in a program for seminarians, which brought me to Rome every summer for a month.
Oh, the Rome experience.
The Rome experience, exactly. And I felt terrible. How am I going to be away from the parish for such a long period of time every summer? But the parishioners felt so enriched by it. They loved it. There was also a point of pride. Our priest goes to Rome to help seminarians. And when I came back, I would discuss it. And it helped them understand more the universal church. I also was moved by them to lead a pilgrimage to Rome for the parishioners. And we brought almost 40 parishioners. A number of them were my family.
Of course, I remember that very well.
Yeah.
Mom and
those pilgrims are now best of friends. They meet with each other regularly. There's a large group chat that they interact with each other. So they're praying for each other, throwing out communications about prayer intentions, throwing out birthdays and things that need to be celebrated. So it's really it's a wonderful thing to see how the universal church, right, and how Rome specifically and an intimacy with Peter and the saints that are here really helps feed the spiritual life of the parish at home. And it really was an incredible experience of getting to see the church great and small, ever ancient, ever new, in a beautiful way.
Well, and then you also have a lot of pastors, you know, this may happen to you someday, who come to Rome, to the North American College, to attend the Institute for Continuing Theological Education. Mm-hmm. And that's being away sometime a couple of months, but they go back tremendously enriched, and therefore the people who gain the most from it after the priest are the parishioners.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, now,
Monsignor Boland's brother, Jerry, Father Jerry, has been on that program.
Our Lady of Perpetual Help. He's been here twice, I think.
I've seen how his parishioners and how his parish really blossoms and flourishes from his experience there.
He's one of the most uplifting people I have ever met in my life. And you just, if you just need to be uplifted, you either want to just, hey, can I have lunch with you? Can I call you on the phone? Can I just send you a message on Facebook, you know.
One of those people where you're having a bad day.
Yeah.
And you know who to call.
Exactly.
And that bad day is history.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And all the future ones, he'll plant a seed in your mind how to, you know, a very sunny, wonderful, upbeat person. Now you are not in that parish. You were moved to. This is such a great story.
Yeah. So I was moved to St. Christina Parish, just a few miles east in the city of Chicago, which is also my home parish.
Yes!
My home parish. They sponsored me through the seminary. I would be back there during the winter time during the break from the seminary to live there and to experience the parish and what have you. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that I would be back as pastor. And now that I am back as pastor, I wander through the rectory and the grounds and the church.
And there's a school.
There's a school, yeah. So we have a large campus. We have 2,500 families,
wow.
Which is a big parish. We
yes.
have a school with 490 students. We have religious education with 350 students. We have, I think it's 12 or 13 people in the OCIA program now. We have just an incredible community. And they're very proud to be from this community, from this parish, right? There's a rich history and heritage of people in the community that stay in the community. My grandparents were parishioners there, right?
So, oh.
now I'm not the only one who has a story like that. There are people who are attending the same grade school as their parents did. I actually have a couple kids in school where I walk through the school or pop into the classrooms, and one of the students will raise their hand and say, "Father Ryan." And I'll say, "Yes." And my dad said to say hi, or
oh.
my mom says that, you know, you did this in high school, or you played baseball in high school, or you did that. And it's really, it's exciting. It's happy. Sometimes it takes a priest a little bit of a time to really feel at home and feel that this is my home. For me, it was. Before I ever stepped
of
in
course.
The door, it was my home, and it's a rare privilege.
All the generations.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, including your own family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I walk through the church, or it's empty at the very beginning of the day or at the very end of the night, and I think that I'm visiting, and I have to remind myself, no, this is my parish now.
This is
this
my
home. Parish again, because I had almost resigned myself to the fact that, you know, I would never be back as anything other than a visitor, because I'll be a pastor elsewhere. So it is a rare privilege to be the pastor of your home parish, but one that I'm really enjoying.
How important is that? And our lives have intersected at so many points, but that's one I got to come to. Well, I've been to Christina for the Mass,
that's
for
right.
your first Mass,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know the parish, the school, you know, the mm-hmm. rectory and everything else. So that's on my list of things to do. Now, there's been... For me, anyway, there's so many stories we've exchanged. We could do a television prime time 3-hour story on so many things. But there's two aspects to your life that are fascinating. And tell us about the Catholic Arab community. Began with a person that we both know.
Yeah, so there is a classmate of mine. We were ordained together who at one point was discerning priesthood with the Franciscans in the Holy Land. And he decided, I am not called to religious life, and I'm not called to be a priest in the Holy Land, and eventually made his way to Chicago. We studied together, we were ordained together, and not long after ordination, he called me and said, "I have some friends that you need to meet, and you should help them." And I said, "Sure, whatever I can do." And what it was a community of Arabic-speaking, Latin-Rite Catholics. The majority are from Palestine in the West Bank, or Jordan, or in the areas near there. And they were really hoping for a place to call home. They wanted to find a place where they could worship together as a community. And they needed more than just a church. Right? They needed more than to rent the church for an hour a week.
Sure.
Because this is a community that is really rich in their expression of faith.
Oh, it's extraordinary.
Wonderful.
I mean, all my trips to the Middle East, mm-hmm. and Michael Botter, of course, who's our mutual friend and part of this wonderful family now.
Exactly. And he's been really my major point of contact, but also my primary educator in how Catholics in the Middle East, how Catholics in the Holy Land really express themselves in an extraordinary richness that has helped my life of prayer.
Yes.
What we've done at my former parish, we had two sites, two campuses, where we would have Mass regularly. And one, we had an extra space, and we allowed ourselves the time to explore that space together, and they began to dream. And what happened was we've begun to welcome this Our Lady of the Holy Land community to the Our Lady of the Ridge Church. And every Sunday they have Mass, which is wonderful, and after Mass there's a big... reception with lunch and socializing. But you know, 3-4 nights a week, there's something else going on. There's choir practice, there's women's groups, there's rosary, there's youth groups.
How vibrant.
It is incredibly vibrant.
But you know, you're right. I mean, I just know any time I've been to the Middle East, to any liturgy, it is so uplifting. The people are really involved. It's not just a ritual, something they could almost do in their sleep. They're really involved. The singing, the Eucharistic, the consecration, etc. These are profound moments. You can just see it. You sense it when you're at a liturgy. I come back renewed. Mm-hmm. I even look at the consecration, prayers of consecration, in a different way when I remember those moments of fervor.
Right, and there's something about the Arabic language praying in the Latin Rite as well. This is the language that was probably closest to the language that Jesus spoke.
The Aramaic.
The Aramaic. But also there's the chanting that you had mentioned and the richness of incense.
Richness, yes.
And I'm telling you, Joan, I would have the parishioners from Our Lady of the Rich St. Linus to come to that community and pray, and they didn't understand a word of it. But they knew right where they were in the Mass because it's Latin, right? They knew where we were. But the chanting and the smell of the incense and so much of the ritual really encompasses you as a whole. And you really walk away not only enriched through your prayer, but hopeful for the church.
Sure.
Not only in the Middle East, but across the world. Because here is a group of people who have traveled all over, hour, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, to attend Mass and to be part of this community. So often we're searching for places of hope, examples of faith well lived, and they found it.
That's all the time we have today with Father Ryan Brady of St. Christina Church in Chicago. But you have to come back next week for part two of our conversation when Father Ryan continues the story of his priesthood, his parish, and a few surprises the Lord has placed in his life.
For more information on these stories or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.